Where I left off, well, first of all, I was gone last week. I was traveling on business. And so I've gone through 1, 2, and 3. And those of you guys that have been with me all the way know that that was highly resistant, and I dragged my feet the whole way and was probably about as defiant as I could possibly be and yet still do it. Like, I had enough, like, that much willingness to go, like, okay. I had a sponsor who said, you know, you're a sick person. You can get well as fast as you want. You can stay sick as long as you want. And I didn't really want to stay sick. And I was also encouraged to, you know, the people that had what I wanted, I would do what they did. There were some people in my home group that had, like, contented, useful, happy sobriety. They had successful businesses, happy home lives, being of service. Things were pretty cool, right? So if I wanted what they had, I had to do what they did. So Barb just read the how it works part. And we read this almost every meeting, right? Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. And Bruce will probably tell us later, what I heard is that were they to edit that, they would change it to, we've never seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. So meanwhile, we have a fellowship where people kind of come in, they go out, they come in, they go out. The guy who spoke yesterday talked about how he did up to step 3 before coming into the rooms. The way they used to do this program was before you came in to the rooms, you did step 3. Fortunately for me, I don't think I would have given my life over to the care of God before I came into the rooms. You would have said that, and I would have said, okay, I'm out. Life sucks, but, you know, that's a little too much. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. Which steps are those? The steps. All of them. It doesn't say, like, if you need to, if your job says so, if the judge wants you to, if you are willing, if you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, any length to get it. That's not like a meeting every day. That's not like, you know, 90 and 90. That's not like any length. Any length is any length. Any length is driving an hour to go to a meeting. Any length is reading the literature. Any length is talking to your sponsor, is doing the program as outlined in our literature. We have great literature here. It's all outlined. In the very beginning, before we had meetings everywhere, people would send off a book, and people would start a program on that, and they would get helped based on that. Meanwhile, I didn't know all that when, you know, when I came in. I had my own thoughts and opinions and experiences, and I had a loving sponsor that you know, held my hand every step of the way. And said things to me like, you know, you need to be helping other people. And in order for you to help people do the steps, you need to do the steps. So I did the steps. So you guys know that I was highly resistant to 1, right? And I don't want to be an alcoholic. Probably don't understand. Probably a little bit different. The shrink says, you know, maybe it's just all this trauma. So how I got through that was, you know, can I predict what's going to happen when I drink? If I pick up a drink, is it going to be 1? Is it going to be 2? Is it going to be 20? Am I going to black out? Will there be people dragged into the bathroom? Like, what's going to happen? I don't know. So then 2 was, for me, I read Came to Believe. I started reading Came to Believe, which for me was very helpful because it had a whole variety of experiences. It wasn't just like one particular religion or approach. I used what worked for me, and that was based on the compilation of everybody else's work. And then on like the micro level, I wanted to drink, and I wanted to drink every day. I drank every day. I got drunk every day. If I didn't get drunk, it was because I was sick, and then I only got like halfway drunk. I mean, I got drunk every day. I spent a lot of time, a lot of money getting drunk. So I could say a prayer, I could want a drink, say the serenity prayer, call another alcoholic, and not drink. That, to me, was proof of a higher power. So I started believing, based on my own experience, of like, God is doing for me what I can't do for myself. Based on, left to my own devices, I'd be drinking. I would drink. That's what I did. I drank. I drank for, you know, decades of my life. So then for me, step three, you know, decided to turn my whole will of my life over? No. I decided to go through with these steps, right? The rest of the steps, which would lead to a spiritual awakening when we reach step 12. So step four, when it came time for step four, my sponsor said, make a list of everyone you have a resentment towards. I'm like, yeah, dog, this is the step I was waiting for. Everybody that pissed me off, everyone that hurt my feelings, everyone that stole my money, everybody that looked at my boyfriend, everyone that took the promotion I think I deserved, all that. Yes, I'm in. Finally, a step I can like get into. So I was thinking about this last night, and do you guys remember the movie Rain Man? So you remember the Dustin Hoffman character? He walked around with this book, and his brother, which was what's his name, Tom Cruise. So Tom Cruise was kind of a douche in the movie, right? Like, he was very selfish and arrogant and manipulative and all that, and he used people, and he just like tried to bulldoze his way through everything. And then the Dustin Hoffman guy, he's like at one point, Charlie Babbitt, like, you know, tries to force him into the car or whatever. And Dustin Hoffman writes down in his book, you know, on April 18th, 1988, Charlie Babbitt hit and twisted my neck and called me a name. I had a list of all that kind of BS, but I had it in my head, of everybody who did everything to me throughout my whole life. I just didn't have it on paper. I'm walking around with 5 kajillion resentments in my head, and they're all about as meaningful as that. To me, they meant something. To me, they were like, you know, ah, you looked at me funny? Duly noted. Took my table? Duly noted. Didn't call me back? Duly noted. Like, just freaking check, check, check. I have a 4-step that is really about as fat as this book. I'm like, yes, thorough, yes. I want to be very thorough. I want that junk out of there. And I was like, cool. You know, I'm so pissed off. And yes, I'm going to take everyone's inventory. And we talk about in the book that, you know, as far as we get is that usually we decide that the world and many of the population is ill. So that's where I was. The world, yes, they have wronged me. Yes, wronged me. Right, let me write you down. Let me write it down. So what's in the 12 and 12, this talks about, it really gets into instincts. So the particular method that I did my steps, I think I told you guys before, I did it with a sponsor, I've done it with sponsees, I've done it with AWOL. I'm talking about my very first 4-step that I did in my first year right now, because that was like the most baggage going on, right? Because what we're looking at, step 4 is our vigorous and painstaking effort to discover what these liabilities in each of us have been and are. We want to find exactly how, when, and where our natural desires have warped us. We wish to look squarely at the unhappiness this has caused others and ourselves. By discovering what our emotional deformities are, we can move toward their correction. Without a willing and persistent effort to do this, there can be little sobriety or contentment for us. Without a searching and fearless moral inventory, most of us have found that the faith which really works in daily living is still out of reach. So for me, I was at the point where I was getting through some, you know, a couple days. At that point, I had about 10 months of sobriety. And it wasn't contented, like, sweet, free ride sobriety. It was angst and drama and chaos, like, hanging in there a day at a time sobriety. Which is fine, because guess what? In the beginning, it's about not drinking. In the beginning, it's about not picking up the drink. Even though you're anxious, even though you're pissed off, even though you're fearful, even though you've been done wrong. Alcoholics especially should be able to see that instinct run wild in themselves is the underlying cause of their destructive drinking. We have drunk to drown feelings of fear, frustration, and depression. We have drunk to escape the guilt of passions and then have drunk again to make more passions possible. The perverse soul sickness is not pleasant to look upon. Instincts on rampage balk at investigation. If, however, our natural disposition is inclined to self-righteousness or grandiosity, our reaction will be just the opposite. No doubt we shall point with pride to the good lives we thought we led before the bottle cut us down. We also clutch at another wonderful excuse for avoiding an inventory. Our present anxieties and troubles, we cry, are caused by the behavior of other people. People who really need a moral inventory. So when I came in here, I thought I was drinking because my family was dysfunctional, my boss was a jerk, my friends had bailed on me, I had post-traumatic stress, I had depression because of all these particular causes, issues, whatever, mostly having to do with other people and my evaluation of them in my life. So sometimes people really did wrong me. I've been the victim of crimes and injustices and all that, and I'm sure I'm not the only one in this room with that going on. One of the cool things that I found about AA is actually taking this inventory. And when people think that, like, AA's got it going on, I think part of that is due to this inventory. Like, most of us, you know, we're living lives and we're surviving and getting by and, you know, trying to make it our way in the world. And we never really check out, like, what's going on in here? Like, what is going on in here? What kind of crazy bullshit is going on in here? What kind of crazy bullshit is going on in a person that I would need to go drink 8 shots of Jägermeister in a night? Some stuff that probably needs to be cleaned up. It definitely helped anyway. So for me, when I was going through that process and going to step meetings and going to literature meetings, that's when I was kind of like, yeah, the world and its people are often sick, and wouldn't it be great if everybody took their inventory? Like just see what's going on. The book talks about how a business that doesn't take inventory is likely to be losing money, let's say. So I've been in business my whole life. We take inventory every month. I would take, I'd go around with a clipboard every end of the month and see, you know, how many crackers are left, how many lemons are left, how many of that, right? Every month. Now, I would think that, for me, my life would be more important than, like, what's in the restaurant cooler, right? I mean, I gotta live with this for till I'm dead. I would schedule time to go in, end of the month, count, you know, how many heads of cabbage are in there, blah, blah, blah. And yet, you know, some people really resist the idea of taking inventory. It's just an illuminating thing to see, like, what's going on with yourself, and then later on you can deal with it just like you would deal with, do you got cabbages in the cooler, are they rotten, are they not rotten, you got lemons, are you out of them, do you need more or do you need less? Like, it's just, we bring all this emotion and self-judgment upon ourselves, and honestly, you know, we drank so much that there is shame, there are bad behaviors, there are things we are sorry about. But like I kind of touched on, you know, we mostly see where we've been wronged and kind of like stop there, right? So what was super cool for me is that I got to write down all those names of people and then what they did, and they were really were as simple sometimes as sometimes they weren't even really a wrong. They were like a fancied wrong. You know, the wrongdoings of others, fancied or real, like that. So sometimes people actually wronged me, and sometimes they just looked at me funny. Maybe they said something about me being hungover again. Maybe they even said something like, Andrea, you shouldn't drink so much. And I didn't like that. I didn't like it. So then this very sneaky part, right? So I went from the names to then what happened or what did they do to looking into the seven deadly sins. And that's not necessarily saying like it's a Judeo-Christian thing. It's things that are harmful no matter if you're Buddhist or, you know, Islamic or whatever. It's pride, anger, envy, greed, gluttony, lust, envy, right? Did I catch them all? The Paggles is one way of remembering. So then you just kind of like check out, did this particular thing affect my anger, my pride, my lust, my gluttony? Like what in it in me did that trigger? Because we're talking about instincts. We're talking about my instincts, and they've gone astray, really. But that, to me, was just a super sneaky approach. Like, I went in there like, write down every wrong that's been done to me. Yes! The beginning of my autobiography by Andrea Laurel. This is going to be a great book. To, oh, what's going, what's wrong in here? What does this affect in here? What's wrong in here? And then, you know, later on we're going to use that information to clean it up. How many of you guys in here have done a four-step? Just show of hands. Okay, so cool. And you may have done it differently. There's worksheets, and there's the laid out in the big book, and there's Hazelden inventories, and there's all kinds of ways. The only way that I've heard is the bad way to do it is to not do it at all. Like, to get in there and take a look is very helpful. And that's one of the tools that other programs, you know, utilize from us, too. So I'm just going to read a little bit more from the 12 and 12, and then we'll open it up. These feelings generate fear, a soul sickness in its own right. Then fear, in turn, generates more character defects. Unreasonable fear that our instincts will not be satisfied drives us to covet the possessions of others, to lust for sex and power, to become angry when our instinctive demands are threatened, to be envious when the ambitions of others seem to be realized while ours are not. We eat, drink, and grab for more of everything than we need, fearing we shall never have enough. And with genuine alarm at the prospect of work, we stay lazy. We loaf and procrastinate, or at best work grudgingly and under half steam. These fears are the termites that ceaselessly devour the foundations of whatever sort of life we try to build. So that paragraph right there is part of like why to me it's so important to do this, because it's almost like we come in here, we don't realize it maybe at first that we're going to like build a whole new life for ourselves, and that concept is fairly scary, at least it was to me, of like, my life really sucks, but I kind of need to hang on to it. But it's almost like you're clearing away, like, let's say a wrecked house, maybe a house that's had a hurricane or a flood or something. And you got to kind of, like, clear some of that junk out of the way so you can, like, build a foundation for a new structure. You're just, like, making room for stuff. Just like if you had rotten lemons in the cooler, you need to throw them out so you can have room for the fresh lemons when they come in the next day. And you don't want the new lemons to get the funk off the old lemons, right? this, the step four, one of the best prayers that I hear, that I use all the time, that I got from step four, is, God, please remove my fear and direct my thinking. Fear is the corrosive thread, and that's the perfect description, right? It's like a battery acid that freaking eats into everything. It eats into relationships. If I'm stressed out, I feel it in my body like it's an acid. It's horrible. I still have it, right? I don't drink anymore about it. What do I do about it? I pray about it. I still have fear, you know, daily, a little bit less often as time goes by. And I try to work the rest of my program so that it doesn't build up. But it, you know, it comes in from time to time. And the best thing to do about that, like just about anything else I've found, is to pray about it. Pray about it and talk to another person about it. I had a resentment towards somebody yesterday because of my 10th step. I told somebody else about it. I'm just saying, you know, hey, I have a resentment about this person. And my boyfriend said, yeah, I have a resentment towards that person too. I'm like, okay, like, right? Duly noted. Move on with life. Don't have to get all into, yeah, and she's a this and blah, blah, blah. Like, just, okay, and what else? Like, move on. There's actions we can take now instead of, like, festering in resentment and festering in fear, right? Because those conditions are prime ground for drinking. Paul talks about the stinking thinking before the drinking. It's that exact kind of junk. Sometimes we relapse. Sometimes we shoot ourselves in the head. There is disease up here, mental and spiritual, that can bring us down, right? And we have the tools. We have each other. We know what to do, but sometimes we have people that just can't take what's going on inside themselves. They just can't. And sometimes, you know, I'm telling you, I have some angst going on. Fortunately, I have people who remind me stuff like, oh, yeah. When you're feeling afraid, why don't you pray about it? When you're feeling pissed off, pray about it. If you have resentment towards someone else, pray about it. Worried, pray. Anxious, pray. And, of course, talk to other people, because for me, I hear from God through other people. There's like a, I think there's like a God page on Facebook or something. But for me, really, if you're in the world and you're looking for God, I see him in nature. I hear God through other people. They speak. They remind me of the answers that maybe I had forgotten about myself. Right? I mean, I've read this stuff. I've done this stuff. But sometimes I forget. It just, unless you're like in there all the time. So I'm very grateful for the opportunity to be of service like this, because I get to be reminded of where I came from, how my mind still works and can play tricks on me and can tell me lies. My mind can tell me absolute lies and I'll believe it, and I can spend half a day hanging out in there, which is just a waste of time, right? There's no room for the grouch and the brainstorm. With that, I will hush. And we're passing the baskets in accordance with the seventh tradition.